See, we're in lesson four, and I've been explaining we're in lesson three. I've been explaining the reading passages at the beginning of the lesson. We did passages one and two. Now we come to passage three. This is page 30.
Okay.
Yasma chako bhikave sakha akusalang pajahitum tasmahang evang vadami akusalang bhikave pajahatati. We didn't do two. Oh, okay, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So... We go back to number two. Okay. Tung king manyata salha ati loboti. A little puzzled why salha should be in the plural. And it's using a plural verb forms also. It seems that I get the impression that there's one person named salha. And he must have been the head of a group of people, maybe a group of friends, followers. And so this happens in the text. If the Buddha is addressing one person who's the head of a group, then he uses a plural form of the name of the person who's the head of the group. Maybe this was a convention in India at that period. Okay, this Tung King Manyata is very, very common. You have thousands of times in the text, especially when, most often when the Buddha is addressing the monks, Tung King Manyata Bhikkhave. He's asking, what do you think about this? Then he will present a proposition for the monks to say what they think about. And usually the question is added in such a way that there's only two ways to answer, either yes or no. And if you answer in one way, you show you're agreeing with the Buddha. If you answer in the other way, you seem to be disagreeing. So everybody always agrees with him. Okay, so Tung King Manyata Salha Ati Lobo. What do you think about this, Salha? Is there greed? In other words, is there such a thing as greed? And of course the answer is Evang Bhante. Evang, sometimes it means thus, but it's also another way of saying yes. And then the opposite of this is no hetang. No hetang. No hetang means, well, no. But it's no, the word no in Pali also means no in English. Then the he is just emphatic. And etang, it means this. So it's like saying, no, not this. This is not the case. Okay. Abija ti ko ahang salha etam atang vadami. Here the abija ti, somebody asked last week, why abija should be followed by a ti. This is a way of sort of separating it out, as though we're putting it in quotation marks. And then vadami, the verb, is the verb, which means I say or I call. And etang means this. Atang has the sense of meaning. Let's see how they explain this. Etang, atang. It characterizes, gives the meaning to this. To render it into meaningful English, you can't just stick very literally to the Pali. You might say, I say that the meaning of this, that is referring to greed, to lobha, I say that the meaning of this is abhija. Abhija means, also it's a synonym for greed. Sometimes it's translated covetousness, grasping, desire, strong desire. So here you have to put it into a meaningful English sentence, you have to unravel the syntax of the Pali. In Pali, one would have to translate word for word, covetousness, with little maybe parentheses, quotation marks around it. The ko is just a little bit emphatic, you can't translate it. It's like the pepper in the stew. Covetousness. Then the ahang here, this is a little strange in Pali, you have so many words between the subject and the verb. So covetousness, I, O Salha, this meaning, say, or to put it into meaningful English, I say this means covetousness. Okay. Ludo ko ayang salha abijalu panang pi hunati. Okay, ludo is an adjective form based on the word loba. One loba means greed. One who has loba is ludo, which means a greedy person. Abijalu is the adjective based on the noun abija. So abijalu is a covetous person, an avaricious person. And then, again, this is a strange feature of the Indian languages, of at least the Pali suttas. We have the pronoun ayang coming after the adjective that describes it. But in English, we would have to say this greedy person. In Pali, greedy this person. Or greedy person this. Okay, so this greedy person who is covetous or grasping. Panam pi hunati. Here, verb is at the end in the normal sentence structure. He kills. Panang. Panang is a living being. And the P here is a conjunction word, something like ch. And this is typical, something typical in Pali sentences. When you have a sequence of phrases which are to be joined together, you put P after each one, even after the first one, that we translate P as also or two. But even the first one, though you haven't even mentioned another one yet, but the first one also gets P. It's like we repeat cha, we say the bhikkhu cha, bhikkhuni cha, the bhikkhu and bhikkhuni. We repeat cha after, we have cha after each one. Similarly with P. So the greedy person who is covetous or grasping kills living beings. Adinam pi adiyati. Here, adinang is the negation of dinang. Dinang is what is given. Adinang is not given. Adiyati means takes. So he takes what is not given. In other words, steals. Para daram pi gachati. Here, para means other, and dara means wife. So paradara means the wife of another. So he goes to the wives of others. In other words, he commits adultery. Musa pi hunati. Musa pi bunati. Musa means falsely. It's an adverb. And bunati is to speak. He speaks falsely. Okay, so the greedy, covetous person takes life, or he destroys life, takes what is not given, commits adultery, and speaks falsely. Then yangsa hoti digaratang ahitaya dukaya. Here, the yangsa, as the note explains, is an abbreviation of young plus asa. That means, young means which, asa means for him, hoti means is, digaratang is literally long night, but it is used idiomatically to mean for a long time. It's very common. Ahitaya means for harm. Hita means welfare or good. The opposite, ahitaya, is harm. And dukkaya means suffering. And what case is this? Dative. Okay, so the young here, the relative pronoun, connects with all the actions that came previously, destroying life and so on. So all of that action, the greedy person destroys life and so on, speaks falsely, which for him is for a long time for harm, for suffering. In other words, putting it in normal English, which will lead to his harm and suffering for a long time. Oh, I'm sorry, that's a good question. Digaratang here, it's an accusative form used as an adverb. Like, it's not a declension, but there's something called the accusative of time, used in the sense to indicate a passage of time. So this is one example of that. I think there's a note on this in one of the earlier lessons. I think it was in lesson two. Yeah, it's on page 25, the accusative case of a word referring to some element of time makes it a time adverb. Thus we have pūbang samayang, which can mean in the forenoon. We have every one of the longest suttas begins ekang samayang bhagava savatiyang viharati jetavane. We would say at one time. We use the locative. Pali also sometimes uses the locative, but often it uses the accusative. Like in English we say, last week I went to New York. So we don't say, during last week I went to New York, or in the course of last week I went to New York, but it's enough to say, last week I went. This is similar. It's not really functioning as an accusative. It's not the object of a verb. Yeah, indirect object, yeah. It's functioning somewhat like an adverbial, we call an adverbial phrase. Okay, any questions, any other questions on this? The way it's a little bit like asking in English, when do you use also, when do you use to? It's just a sort of stylistic feature. I can't think of specific rules governing the use. But ch will generally connect strings of nouns, though p also can connect nouns. I can't think of a specific rule. Ch is more common. Yeah. You just have to take the sense of the sentence. Here, there's nothing else it can refer to. And to take the young as referring to all of those actions, simply it makes sense, so you know that that's what it refers to. But these are things one becomes acquainted with as you go through more texts and then learn to read them. Okay, the next one just continues. Young, tanking, mangyata. Sauha ati doso. Doso means hatred. Evang bante. Yes, venerable sir. Okay, then. Byapado tiko ahang etamatang vadami. The word byapado is often translated ill will, or sometimes the Latin, more Latin phrase, malevolent, which means the same thing. This is very important that we have the five hindrances of the mind. The obstacles to meditation. The second is byapada. So here the Buddha is saying, I say this means that dosa, hatred, means ill will. Dutto ko ayang salha bya pana chito, panang pi hanati, and so forth. Okay, the word dutto is an adjective form, it's actually a past participle form, based on the word doso. I think the root of this is D-U-S, dus. Which means to hate. Then this gives the noun dosa and the past participle, dusa. Except that the past participle here doesn't function so much as a real past participle, but it comes to take on an independent meaning as a person with hatred, a hating person. And bya pana chito, the word chito means, or chita means what? Mind. And bya pana, this is also a past participle related to the noun byapado. So byapana, but it doesn't function so much as a past participle, but it means one with ill will. Or you could say malevolent. So byapana chito means what? Excuse me? A mind. Yeah, but here... Right, exactly. Here, this is the important thing. In a sentence like this, byapana chito, you see, chitta is a neuter. So if chitta actually means mind, then it would come as a neuter, in a neuter form. It would be byapana chittang. But it's a masculine form, nominative masculine. So this is formed, byapana plus chitto is forming a compound qualifying a person with a mind of ill will. We will come to this class of compounds later, I think, formally in the book. So here it means a person who has a mind of ill will. So it's a hating person, one with a mind of ill will kill living beings, take what is not given, go to the wives of others, and that will be for his harm and suffering for a long time. Then the answer is yes, Venerable Sir. Then the third part. Tung King Manyata Salha Ati Moho. What do you think, Salha? Is there moha means what? Delusion. So Evang Bhante, yes, Venerable Sir. Avijja tiko ahang salha etamattang vadami. I say that this, I say the meaning of this, or I say that this means avijja. Avijja is what? Ignorance. So then, mulho ko ayang salha avijja gato. Now, muho, it's also a past participle form coming from here. I think the root is mu. So the root mu gives the verb mu. Actually, it comes, I think, moihati. The root is mu, but it undergoes. Can you see in the back? Yeah, moihati, which means to be deluded. And then that gives the noun moha, which means delusion, and the past participle form mulha, deluded. And here, as in English, we use the past participle, deluded, could also mean a person who was deluded, a deluded person. Similarly in Pali, So this deluded person who is avijja gatto. Here avijja is ignorance. Gatto means gone to. Who is gone to ignorance. In other words, it means simply an ignorant person, an ignorant one. So this deluded, ignorant person destroys or kills living beings, takes what is not given, goes to the wives of others, and speaks falsely. And that leads to his harm and suffering for a long time. Any questions about that? As I've mentioned many times before, or several times before, to understand the Pali, it's very important to write, first translate word for word, then you have to understand the sentence, what is the verb, look for the subject, the verb, any objects, indirect objects, then you have to see how they interrelate. Okay, the next. Tanking manyata salha, ime dhamma kusalava akusalava. Literally, these dhammas, these things, here dhamma doesn't mean teaching or doctrines, but these things, these qualities, the qualities, greed, hatred, delusion, wholesome or unwholesome. And notice that there's no explicit verb. Often in Pali, when the verb to be is implied, or when the verb to be is intended in a sentence, you don't have to actually put the verb. So it's just easily understood. These qualities, are they wholesome or unwholesome? Then the answer is, they're unwholesome, Venerable Sir. Savajja va anavajja va. Savajja means blameworthy. Anavajja, blameless. Are they blameable, blameworthy, or blameless? Blameworthy, Venerable Sir. Vinyu garahita va, vinyu pasata va. Here, vinyu means intelligent or wise. It comes from the root nya, which means to know, with the prefix vi, which strengthens it. And because of the meeting of V with N, the N doubles. Then if we were to continue this and put vijnana, then we get the word that's usually translated consciousness, which also has nya. But vinyu means a person who is aware, a wise person. And then this is joined with garahita, which means blamed or criticized. So, are these things criticized by the wise, or the other word here, pasatta? Pasatta with one P, it means praise. Then the P doubles because of the compounding. The reason it doubles is because in Sanskrit form, it would be prasasta. The prefix would be pra, P-R-A. So as a way of showing this in the compound, that the R has been eliminated, deleted, omitted, the R is sort of restored by doubling the P. And then the answer is that these things are vinyu garahita bhante. They are criticized by the wise. Any questions about this passage? What do we use? What? Yeah. Yeah, ye would be ye is a relative form. You would use ye, the demonstrative, that's the relative pronoun, if you're connecting it. If it's part of a relative phrase connected to another phrase, a demonstrative phrase, let me take an example. Ye dhamma akusala te dhamma savaja. Okay, ye dhamma akusala. Those things which are unwholesome, te dhamma savaja. Those dhammas are blameworthy. You see, the ye generally connects with a te. Ete. One could have used it. It would also be acceptable. Ime and ete. There's not a really clear, definable difference. Just they're alternative forms. But I think the ime forms, the ayang forms, are more common. But occasionally one does come across the forms from aso, etang, ete. They mean the same. You can't distinguish one or another. Okay, shall we go to number 3? Yasma chako bhikave saka akusalang pajahitung tasmahang evang vadami. Okay, this sentence is a good example of how a relative and demonstrative form connect in the same sentence. First, we have a relative form. And we have the word chukko here, which ch is and the ko is a little emphatic. Because this sentence, this is actually part of a sutta, and is following from the previous sentence. So the chukko connects what is here with what is also in the text, but it's not included in this excerpt. And now we look. What has to be explained here is the form sakka, which means to be able. And to be able generally goes with an infinitive form. The infinitives usually end with tung. So the tung here is pajahitung, the tung form here is pajahitung, which means to abandon, to eliminate. And what is to be eliminated is the unwholesome, the akusala. So yasma chiko bhikkhave saka akusalang pajahitum means and because. Yasma has the sense of because, and tasma has the sense of therefore. Yasma is the relative form, tasma the corresponding demonstrative form. And so, and because, O monks, it is possible, sakha, to abandon the unwholesome, tasmahang. And what is tasmahang? What is, and why does it have that H-A-M at the end? Right. So, but why is it put in the form tasmahang rather than tasmahang? What is that? Excuse me? Shandi. Sandi. It's a sandi. Right. Sandi. Not shandi. Sandi. Because the two A's meet and you just drop the first A of ahang. Okay, so because it is possible to abandon the unwholesome, therefore I say thus, akusalang bhikkhave pajahata ti. Therefore I say, abandon, O monks, the unwholesome. And now we come to an update of sentence, which is establishing a hypothesis. Akusalang cha hidang bhikkhave pahinang ahitaya dukaya sangvateya nahang evang vadeyam. Here the optative, especially when it's put in a conditional sentence, when you have two optatives in a sentence, establishes an if-then relationship between the two phrases in the sentence. So here the sense is, okay, the chahidang. Chahi, again, it's just emphatic. So the he carries here almost the sense of for, as though giving a reason, like because or for. So, for if the hidang is he plus idang, idang means this. For if this unwholesome that has been abandoned, pahinang, Ahitaya Dukkaya Sangvataya. If it led to harm and suffering, Nahang Evang Videyam. Nahang is what?
Not I.
Right, not I. But the N goes actually with the verb. So I would not say thus, abandon, O monks, the unwholesome. Akusalang Bhikkhave Pachahatati. And Pachahata is what form of verb? What mood is it? It's imperative plural. Second person plural. So if this unwholesome, when abandoned, would lead to harm and suffering, I would not speak thus. I would not say thus. Abandon, O monks, the unwholesome. Yasma chako bhikkhave akusalang pahinang hitaya sukaya sangvatati tasmahang evang vadami akusalang bhikkhave pachahatati. Here we should take chako in the sense of because, since now it's establishing a reason. I'm sorry, ch we take in the sense of but rather than and. But, and then yasma in the sense of because, conjoined with the following tasma. But, O monks, because the unwholesome, when abandoned, leads sangvatati to harm, hitaya, and suffering, sukaya. Therefore, I say thus, O monks, abandon the unwholesome. Any questions on this? Kusalang bhikkhave bhaveta. Okay, bhaveta is what mood of speech is it? It's imperative, right? And bhaveta comes from the verb bhaveti, which means to develop, to cultivate. It seems to me, actually, looking at this passage now, that the authors, by mistake, by oversight, they should have had the opening sentence of number 3 should have been akusalang bhikkhave pajahatta, and then it would have continued, sakha bhikkhave akusalang pajahitum, then yasma chiko bhikkhave sakha akusalang pajahitum. Then it would have been parallel to the second paragraph. I said, if you look at the very beginning of passage 3, it starts with yasma chako. Then if you look at the second paragraph, it starts with kusalang bhikkhave bhaveta. Then the next sentence is yasma chako bhikkhave sakha kusalang bhaveta. So I think paragraph 3, they should have retained the preceding sentence of the Pali, which would have been akusalang bhikkhave pajahata sakha bhikkhave akusalang pajahitum. Then it would have continued yasma chako bhikkhave sakha akusalang pajahitum. Okay, that's just my observation. Don't pay attention to it.
Chop it out in the wrong place.
Yeah. You lose the parallel. Okay. Yasma. Okay. Sakha bhikkhave kusalang bhavetum. It is possible, O monks, to develop the wholesome. Then yasma chako bhikkhave sakha kusalang bhavetum. And because it is possible to develop the wholesome, tasmahang evang vadami. Therefore, I say thus, kusalang bhikkhave bhavetati. Therefore, I say, O monks, develop the wholesome. Then comes the argument. Again, it's put in this optative voice, showing a condition which isn't true. Kusalang cha hidang bhikkhave bhavitam ahitaya dukkaya sangvateya Nahaṁ evaṁ vadeyaṁ. For, O monks, if this wholesome, when developed, would lead to harm and suffering, I would not say thus, kusalaham bhikkave bhave tati. Develop, O monks, the wholesome. Then coming to the conclusion, yasma chakho bhikkave kusalang bhavitam hitaya sukhaya sangvatati tasmahang evang vadami kusalang bhikkave bhave tati. But, O monks, because the wholesome, when developed, leads to well-being and happiness, hitaya means to well-being, to welfare, sukhaya to happiness, tasmahang evang vadami. Therefore, I say thus, develop, O monks, the wholesome. This is really a very beautiful passage, the way so many ideas are compressed so neatly and so logically just into a few sentences. Any questions about this? Yeah. Yeah, hita means welfare. Welfare, well-being. Hitaya is the dative form. So it means to well-being. Often we have hita and sukha joined together. Sukha indicates the aspect of, you say, the feeling happy. And hita is more objective, one's situation. Like being reborn in a good plane of existence, having good outer conditions, a healthy body, and so forth. Yeah. So, the difference in English or in Pali? And loba. In Pali. They actually mean pretty much the same, but they're just used in somewhat different contexts. Like loba is used generally when the Buddha is mentioning the three evil roots, loba, dosa, moha, greed, hatred, delusion. Abhijja occurs, it occurs as one of the 10 unwholesome types of action. But abhijja in that context, it takes on a somewhat stronger meaning of wishing to get possessions of the, to gain possession of the belongings of others. But most often they use very synonymously. No. Loba, dosa, moha, but sometimes raga is replaces loba. Raga is lust, yeah. Lust or attachment. Yeah. Sometimes it's used that way. But sometimes abhijja is used in a more general way. Like we say, like in describing the practice of satipatthana, the foundations of mindfulness, he dwells, let's see, vinaya loke abhijja domanasang. He dwells, vinaya, having put away abhijja, you say, covetousness or greed, and domanasa, sadness in relation to the world. Here, abhijja means any type of grasping desire, craving, greed, domanasa, sadness, depression, dejection. Any further questions? Yeah. The stem form ends in an A for this particular class of nouns. If in a dictionary, well, actually, I think the Pali English dictionary will indicate whether the noun is masculine or neuter. The glossaries here use the stem form so that you can tell at a glance whether it's a masculine or a neuter form. In these glossaries, when they end in O, mo, doso, moho, then it's You know that it's masculine if it ends in ung, rupang, chitang. You know it's neuter. Okay, before we close, I just want to go through lesson four. Not through the whole lesson, don't get worried. I did give alternatives for the further readings glossary of lesson three, didn't I, in class? Okay, I'll give some alternatives for lesson four. You tell me, Reverend Anthony, when the other day I indicated some to you. I didn't mark those in my book, but if I missed anything, then you tell me. There might be some additions here that I didn't tell you after considering these further. Okay, on page 47, ajiva, that's beginning with the long A. The best meaning of these is livelihood. We have sama ajiva, means right livelihood. Then going down to the kalyana, I don't know where they get sincere. Noble or good, the best is good. Okay, then turning over, okay, the middle of the page, pamutto. They give one who is lazy, not diligent, other alternatives. One who is lazy, I don't quite agree with. It's not so much laziness, but more a matter of negligence or heedlessness. So the adjectives, best adjectives would be heedless or negligent. Okay, then just at the bottom, I should explain one thing. You see that there's a verb here, basati, which means to shine forth, to be bright. Then just below it gives the present participle form, basamano. And then they say this is the present participle of basati, which means says or recites. So you might get a little confused when you see this and think that the verb just above basati means to shine forth, to be bright. So now why are they saying basati means to say or to recite? But there's actually two verbs, basati. You see, in Sanskrit, one has one verb, bhashati, with S, with the dot under it. That is bhashati, to speak. And then you have the other verb in Sanskrit, basati, which means meaning to shine. I think in Sanskrit it actually comes out basate, to shine. But in Pali, all S's, all the three S's of Sanskrit become S. So there's no sh or sh sound in Pali. So basati, there are two verbs in Pali. Basati, which represents Sanskrit bhashati, means to speak, to state. And basati, which represents Sanskrit basate, means to shine. Okay, then on the next page, virochati, just an alternative, since there are three verbs that are usually used together meaning to shine. One is basati, virochati. What is the third? Maybe it's here. Tapati. Tapati, we could say to glow. Excuse me? Tapati, on page 48, about sixth one down. To shine, be bright, lustrous. So for virochati, we might use radiate, just to have a different verb. So you wonder, how am I going to render these three verbs? So tapati, we have the expression tapati, basati, virochati, to glow, to shine, to radiate. Okay, then going down a few places on page 49, samapajano, they give fully comprehending one, but I think that's too strong or too high, fully comprehending. That's a Buddha or an Arhant, but this is usually used for a monk who's practicing. So I would prefer clearly comprehending, or correctly comprehending, rightly knowing. Then going to page 59 for the further reading. Yeah.
For
Oh yeah, okay. Sadhiyati. appropriate takes on oneself, enjoys, accepts, receives. Yeah. Accepts. They give appropriate takes on oneself, enjoys. Okay, page 59 for the further reading. Anuttara, the third word down. It is actually, literally, it would be rendered unsurpassed, or sometimes supreme. Then asava on the bottom of the page, asavo. It's been rendered in many different ways by translators. These are like the very basic defilements which keep one bound to the round of samsara. You could explain them as influxes. One translation, things that flow into the mind. Some use effluence, things which flow out of the mind. Some use pollutants, things that pollute the mind. Some use, I've seen, contaminants, things that contaminate the mind. Venerable Nyanamoli used taint. Okay, the next page, page 60. A kaga chitta could be, I think of tranquil mind is not so good. Certainly not literal. I would say better of one-pointed mind. Aga is point, eka is one, so with one-pointed mind. Eka is one. Yeah. And then it's eka plus aga plus chitta. Okay, then on the next page, 61, about the middle of the page, a little above the middle of the page, pamatto. Here I would say heedless or negligent. Heedless. I'll write it. Actually, we had this also. It's in the amongst the words in the front of the lesson. I'll write it on the board. Then Mara towards the bottom is not so much death, though sometimes Mara metaphorically stands for death, but Mara is really, it's the god of death, the evil one. The one who tries to tempt people and lead them away from the path of Dharma. Boy, they give a lot of words. The rest seem all right so far. You don't have to worry. Don't try to memorize all of these words. Otherwise, I won't have any students left if I require you to memorize them. But just try. You will pick up the vocabulary as you get familiar, as you go through passages, and you'll come to see what are the words that repeat and what words occur very seldom. But just learn how to use the glossary. And of course, basic doctrinal terms you should become familiar with, like Arya, Noble One, Asava, Taint, Arahat, the Liberated One. Or common words like kala, meaning time, dhamma, kala, yeah. Well, kala is the form to show that it's a masculine, but the stem form is kala, yeah. Yes, kala, sometimes it means proper time, sometimes it means simply time. Yeah, but generally it has the sense of proper time, often the sense of proper time. Okay, any questions? Okay. Wait, let me... The further readings in part 3? Bahulikata. To cultivate, you could say. It's very similar to bhavitam. Almost the same, just a little... I mean, there are very often used together. Bhaveti bahuli karoti. He develops and cultivates. Bhavitam bahuli katam. Bhaveti always comes first. Probably bhaveti, maybe it indicates an earlier stage. First one cultivates. Maybe it's like growing a flower. Bhaveti is like bringing the flower up when it's a plant, when it's very small. And as it grows bigger and bigger, then it becomes bahuli karoti, cultivating. You said that there were two words? Oh, yeah. Oh, also one word. Oh, I gave, these are replacements for lesson three. Okay. Okay, if there are no further questions, then we'll end. Dedicate the merit. Akasa tacha bhumata deva naga mahidika punyanta nanamo dipa chirang rakanta sasanam. Akasa tacha bhumata deva naga mahidika punyanta nanamo dipa chirang rakanta desanam. Akasa tacha bhumata deva naga mahidika punyanta nanamo dipa chirang rakanta tang sadam.